Cliff Jumper, commence countdown. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You're listening to All Things Transformers, version 2.0.
And now, ToyCast, with your host, TFG1 Mike, and the goddamn Protoman.
This is the TFCon ToyCast, All Things Transformers Roundup. I am TFG1 Mike. Joining me is one of the organizers, the goddamn Protoman. He has been on the show before. Hello, sir. How are you?
How are you doing? I'm great.
Pretty good. And we also have one of the convention attendees this year, Jaws Deadeye. Hello, sir.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good, pretty good. All right, so this is basically our I've tried to do this since I've known Proto Man. We try to do a TFCon pre-show and post-show every year. This year we can only get to do a post-show, so where do you want to start, Proto Man, as far as talking about the 10th annual TFCon convention?
Well, I could just say, like, about all the stuff that pretty much went down. I think I'll just pull up the schedule, and then I'll just go through, like, some, like, just trying to remember some of the crazy stuff that went down and everything, because it was easily the biggest show we've ever had. Last year, we actually kind of, like, outgrew our location, because, well, essentially last year, it got to the point where we couldn't fit any people into the dealer room, and the dealers themselves, we couldn't even fit enough dealers. We had to put them in the hallway. Like it was getting ridiculous. Like we were at that original location for, I believe, 8 years without a problem. And then last year something just hit a boiling point where we couldn't be there anymore because the show got just too big. It got so big to the point that we had to take over other rooms, move panel rooms to areas that were so far away from the actual deal room that it was making it difficult, that we were just like, we outgrew the convention. We needed something that was bigger. And then we moved it all to the Delta Middleville Resort Center, which is this humongous hotel with water slides and everything that just completely fit our needs. And we had a deal room that was, I think, 150% larger. We had panel rooms that were absolutely ridiculously huge for the first time ever, because I always wanted panel rooms that were big, 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 so that, you know, when you talk, it echoes, it goes far, and that would accommodate big screen TVs, so if you're showing stuff, people could see it no matter where they are. It just, we got a really huge location, something that we've been needing to get for a while, and since it was also our 10th show, we wanted to not just, you know, expand upon all those little, you know, technical things. We wanted to have more guests than ever before, more exclusives than ever before, and just completely go all out as much as humanly possible. And we pretty much did that. We ended up with Simon Furman, Gary Chalk, Paul Eiding as guests. Artist-wise, we had Alex Millen of the Drift series. We had Matt Moylan pop in quickly of Little Formers, but he had to go back. He had to get out of somewhere because he was busy. We had Dan Kahana of the Wreckers fame and all the BotCon exclusive stuff and of box art. We had Joe Nung, who worked with Dreamwave for years, and he worked with IDW with recent projects. We had – who else was there? We had so many freaking guests. It was nuts. On the 80s expo, if you were because on the Sunday we do 80s stuff, we also had Smith Hart, who's Bret Hart's older brother, for those who are big wrestling fans. He came down with a whole bunch of like memorabilia and merchandise from Bret Hart's career, and so that was pretty crazy too. On top of that, if you want to even call them guests, we had the Barricade car from the 2007 movie, well, a replica of it.
The Bumblebee, the two Bumblebees.
And a replica of the 70s Bumblebee.
That's awesome.
Both of them were in the convention center, not just outside chilling, like, hey, there's the entry to the dealer room. Hey, there's the two cars. You could pose with them and stuff. And then on the Sunday, and this was probably the most awesome thing, a guy showed up with, I swear to God, almost dead on Tim Burton first Batman Batmobile.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw the picture of that on Facebook.
And like that, and so, you know, just we went absolutely nuts this year. Like, and I haven't even hit the schedule yet. Like, just the, those little factors, you know. Then exclusives, you know. First, we had the Stronghold exclusive, which upgrades your onslaught into a, I like to call it a War Within Fortress Maximus, which is like a Fortress Maximus before, you know, he became that famous leader that we know today. And we also had the Toxin Snake exclusive, which is a, he was a secret member of the Decepticon Headmasters who pioneered the clone technology, which would later be used for, you know, cloning reflectors and making clones of Seeker Jets and stuff. And then with the final exclusive was, again, to tie into that cloning of the reflectors and stuff, we had the Night Ops PE-11 repaint team of a reflector, but done in dark stealth colors. And their name is Bullet Shield, and I forget the last one, but they're like supposed to be they're supposed to be Toxin's you know, minions that he created for himself when he made clones of them. So three amazing exclusive sets that were, well, I know the Snake and the PE-11, the camera, those two sold out like in the first 30 minutes of the show. But like, those were nuts. I remember because I was doing autograph signings for the comic book because I wrote the comic. And when I looked down to do some autographs, when I looked back up, because the guy to the left of me was the guy who was handling all the exclusives, like both of them were gone, like completely. And I was like, oh my God, what happened to everything? It's like, they're done. I'm like, you're joking, right? And like, it was crazy. It was absolutely nuts. And we were just talking, me and Wendell were just talking before, before we started recording, someone, I would not like to say who, but someone took a Toxin exclusive, the Snake, and put it on eBay that same Friday night that the convention started, and it jumped to $400. And keep in mind, this figure cost $25 to buy at the show.
Wow.
So like, and I was telling people, I'm like, well, you have to think about it this way. You go to BotCon and you buy the box set for like $350, and then you put it on eBay, and if you're lucky, you get $1,000. Now, $1,000 from $350 is approximately, it's about a 250% profit margin, you know, which is good. Yeah. 250% is a good profit margin. But buying a $25 figure and it turning into $400,
yeah,
you can't even put a percentage on that. That's ridiculous. And no, it's not over yet, that auction. It's still going. You know,
wow.
It started Friday. It's going to end Friday. So it's that's just silly. You know, like people are like, they really like, because I think it, I don't want to like toot my own horn, but I really think that because we did fiction related to those repaints, it really drove people even more so to want them. Mm-hmm. Because if they were like, you know, the Snake Toxin Head robot, it's been repainted in the past. There was even a BotCon exclusive one, Mega Toy Fan. He had the Snake repaint as one of his dealer room exclusives that he was selling at the show, and it did okay, and it didn't go for that much. But this one, like, something just was in the air. I don't know what it was. Like, again, I'm trying to figure it out. I think part of it had to do with because me and Alex Milne and Josh Perez, both two really talented people from IDW, because the three of us threw together a comic book that really fleshed out not only the Stronghold character but Toxin, and really put some story behind them and tech specs and everything in this nice little package, it gave a very strong connection to people who were coming to the show and they really wanted to have it. And since he sold out so quickly, the people who didn't get it still really wanted to get it. So, you know, they were willing to pay large sums of money, and it's nuts. It really was, but it's very flattering at the same time too.
Now, this is the first year that TFCon has had multiple exclusives, correct?
Yes. Well, the first time we've had multiple exclusives that were toys. Yeah.
Well, that's what I mean. The toys. Yeah. This is the first time you guys have had multiple exclusive toys. My question is this going to lead to maybe a TFCon box set next year?
Well, I'll tell you this much. We had we had a really successful time with Head Robots. Let's put it this way. In the past, we've worked with other third-party companies. You know, we worked with Justy Toys in 2007 when we had our world's smallest slag that was done in G2 colors. In 2008, excuse me, in 2009, we worked with Fans Project. In 2010, we worked with iGear. I'm trying to remember the company that did
Impossible Toys.
Impossible Toys, thank you. That did the Nightbird. So we had different experiences with different companies, and you know, again, the most important thing is the process and how willing. And when we first did the Stronghold, Toxin was actually a suggestion by them. They were willing to make more exclusives for us. They liked it. So since number one, they're so great to these guys and very friendly. And very easy to communicate with, and then also very generous, and combine that with the fact that their stuff is also high quality, which is very important, especially with the debacle that happened last year with Nightbird. I don't want to say anything officially, but I'm pretty sure we might be seeing more of them in the future. You know,
very awesome.
So,
very awesome.
Like, if there would be a box set, I could see it personally. Again, don't quote me on this, but I could see it if we did have some kind of, like, let's say, 3-pack box set or something. It would definitely be with them, because I see them being the someone who would be willing to dish out multiples of merchandise in order for it to happen. Like, the PEX-11, the PE-11 camera, that was actually a result of some networking when the entire staff went to BotCon that year. We all went there, and then we talked with the guys who were dealing with who are the guys who do that's
Perfect Effect.
Perfect Effect, yeah. You know, with the guy, you know, we were talking with them, and we worked something out, and that happened. So that was just like a last minute string of luck. So last minute, though, that let me tell you, for those who own the comic book, the panel that has the three reflector night ops in them, those three spots that are the three reflector characters, they were originally supposed to be the Decepticon headmasters. Alex Milne actually had to go back and change the panel and draw them in instead, because when I found out that we had them as exclusives for the show, I wanted to include them in the comic somehow, so we had to go back and change a few little things here and there in order for them to be present.
Right. That's awesome.
But
all right, so
yeah,
what, as far as the scheduling, what was like the first big thing that you guys did this
well,
year?
After the registration and people, like, cause how it always starts is the Friday people come, they pick up their badges and their stuff, you know, just because they want to get their hands on their exclusives and everything early, get their comic books, their T-shirts, and we do, like, if specific people are there, we try to convince them to sit down and do signing. So I sit down and I do a signing. For the comic book, Alex was going to do a signing with me for the art part of it, and because he designed the box art for the toys, but he was really busy that Friday night, so it was just pretty much me doing only the signings. And then following that, we have what's at, it starts usually at 7 or 8 o'clock, we have a giant opening ceremony. And the opening ceremony was pretty wild, actually. to say the
pretty
least.
Crazy.
Yeah, essentially, I don't even know. I'm pretty sure something's going to be floating around later in the future of videos. But it essentially started with me. I don't know. How many people do you think were in that room, Wendell?
I think it was it full.
Yeah,
you,
it was
you would have a better vantage point than me.
It was full, though. So,
I don't
think
know
like much. like 100 or 200, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But like literally like 100 or 200 people. Me singing the Car Robots theme from Transformers Car Robots, better known as Robots, in front of everyone on the microphone in Japanese as the TFCon national anthem. And everyone had to rise for it.
And I was doing backup.
And
yelling.
Wendell was doing backup in betweens. And, you know, we did a lot of, like, skits, like joke skits in front of the audience just to, like, you know, get people. And then we did a little because it was our 10th show, we wanted to do a little, like, just we had a video commemorating the past stuff of the past 10 years. And a lot of it was actually jokey stuff and, you know, all the funny things that happened through the past 10 years and, you know, staff who have come and gone. And we commemorate because some that have left staff but still come to the show as an attendee, we wanted to get them to come up and commemorate them and say thank you for all the work you've done and everything. So it was more to just celebrate the last 9 years of TFCon and to just look back and be grateful for that, you know, how far we've gone from that simple day when our boss, Colin, was playing hockey and he said, hey, why don't we like rent a room and sell some Transformers? That's how it all started, literally. It was just like, hey, why don't we rent a room and we'll just set up some tables and I could get rid of these extra Transformer toys I have. And then it all ballooned from there, from those humble beginnings. Anyways, after the opening ceremony, there's also the parts party, which because the deal room is not open yet, it opens the Saturday. But the Friday, because the deal room's not open yet, we open it up to the parts party, which is just pandemonium, more or less. It's literally just everyone just come with your freaking toys and just go nuts and do whatever you can, you know. And, I mean, there was Ultra Primal, who had, like, every BotCon 11 exclusive in one corner. Then he had some guy who just had, like, you know, FAA-graded mint in box, you know, G1 shit. And then you had one guy who was just like, you know, like all the really weird Brave stuff. And then you had like, you know, there's a few guys who come from the States and they go, well, I'm going to the parts party and I'm coming from the States. So I'm going to bring some stuff that they only have in the States and bring it to Canada. And then I'll, you know, it's easy money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think the most common thing was Space Case, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Dark of the Moon Space Case, because he's not out in Canada yet. So some guy came with like 5 or 6 of them, and he also brought those Scout Star Wars Transformers, the smaller ones that recently came out.
Yeah.
So he brought those, and those like all disappeared because because again, you have to realize like all these people in Canada, especially the completists, they were just like, oh, we don't have that here yet, you know. or like you bring like a Sentinel Prime who speaks only English instead of, you know, because we also have that issue.
The Canadian version only speaks French?
No. It's because, well, what they do in order to accommodate the French, if it'll say, like, I am Optimus Prime, or, you know, this is Starscream, bring me the Allspark or something, it'll just say the character's name. And just that over and over. Even if it has multiple lines in the English version. So Sentinel Prime just says Sentinel Prime. And when you put the gun in his hand, or when you, because like with Sentinel Prime, you have to push different parts of his body, and he'll say different lines, but he'll just say in the Quebec/Canada version, Sentinel Prime, Sentinel Prime, and it was the same thing, Optimus Prime, or instead of this is Jetfire, it was just Jetfire, Jetfire. So that's the problem with a lot of the leader classes. It was a big, big issue with a lot of the leader classes. And so when people bring those Dark of the Moon leader classes from the States and from Target or whatever, they're more sought after because they're the more electronically complete ones.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
After the parts party, well, while the parts party is going on, there's two things that happen in the panel room. First, there's a classic G1 trivia that's ran by J. Alvatron. And then following that, there's a it's kind of a precursor to then the deal room opening up, which is ran by a good buddy of mine, Decepticon Army, also known as Phil, a fellow podcaster from Canadian Slag. He does a collecting 101 for Transformers, which is he gives you helpful advice on how to approach your collecting and what to do and how to think when you're approaching different collecting angles. And it's pretty much something to think about when going into the deal room. Like he was pretty much explaining, well, if you're someone who wants Fortress Maximus, the difference between buying an incomplete Fortress Maximus and getting all the pieces one at a time, because some people do that, they just buy the core body without the head or anything and right. then piece it together slowly throughout the years, as opposed to buying it 100% complete off of eBay and spending that giant wad of money, which pays off more, what's the difference? And so he kind of goes through where your head is at when you're doing that and, you know, what's important to you and your priorities. And so just one example of that, but many things he does in the panel, just kind of to help people decide what they're going to do the following day in the deal room. And the last thing on Friday is also there's, again, fun stuff. So there's a Transformers Pictionary that goes on in the Hazel panel room, which is a separate, smaller panel room.
What was the faction feud this year?
The faction feud happens on the Saturday.
Okay. We'll get to that when we get to Saturday.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever asked anyone this, but what in the hell? And I know Techno does it every year. What the hell is the TFCon cookie? What the hell is that all about?
Okay, that's the general Techno thing.
Okay, that's his thing.
In the past, when we were at the Doubletree, the old hotel that we were at, a tradition that the Doubletree does is when a big conference or convention or anything, not just toy-related or geek-related stuff, if there's a dental convention, if there's a boating convention, if there's some kind of convention going on at their location, if you go to their hotel under that convention rate, you get free cookies when you come. It's a silly little thing they do that they used to do. And because we were switching locations, and this new place, obviously, it's a different location, didn't do that anymore. General Techno, I remember he posted over Twitter something about he bought a bunch of cookies for everyone or something. I don't know. I'm not responsible for his actions.
It's the first time I heard about that.
He's responsible for his actions sometimes. Okay. But anyway, all right, so Saturday morning, what happens
so
when you guys first?
The Saturday, obviously the big, big day. How it works is the people who pre-registered, they get in a half hour early into the deal room. The ones who didn't, obviously they have to just wait until 10. Honestly, and this is when I knew that this show was nuts. It was the first time ever I saw such a big line. Like, it was BotCon size, the line for the dealer room. I couldn't describe it because you weren't there, but it was literally
going to the restaurant.
To the bar.
Yeah.
What? So it went all the way to the bar. So we're talking like.
So over the hill and through the woods.
Yeah, that's just it. Like, it's hard to describe because you don't, like, especially the listeners don't realize how far away the bar is from the actual convention, but it's far, you know? So the fact that it went that far, it was a BotCon-sized line. It was nuts for the dealer room. It was absolutely nuts. I never saw anything like that in all the years I've been doing the show. And I think it had to do with the fact that, you know, it is a movie year, for one. So there's a lot of still hype from Dark of the Moon in the air and in the blood of people. It's still in theaters, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that probably was one factor. And also because our last show was so ridiculously huge, it was only a matter that if it was going to be a movie year, that it would only be bigger. And then when the doors opened, insanity ensues, and it was a lot of fun. Paul Eiding had a question and answer panel. Where he pretty much – the thing with Paul Eiding, what's great about him is he was a Broadway actor first and a voice actor second. And he's also very abrasive, Paul. Like, he's the kind of guy who loves to tell dirty stories and stuff and crazy stories because he's lived a crazy life. He really has. And so – and it's funny because he has his wife with him. And you think when he has his wife with him, he's going to calm down. No, he's making jokes at her expense. He's great. He really is. And – like, his panels, and especially at, like, we'll get into the best part of what is TFCon, but like after the shows, he's just one of the greatest. Like, easily, I've met him at three different shows, and every time I've seen him, he's always like side-splittingly funny because of it. And, you know, and this is Perceptor, you know, like, that's all he's ever done in Transformers, one of the most boring characters, but yet the man behind the microscope, so to speak, is easily one of the funniest guys in the entire in all of Transformer voice actors because of the stuff that he's done in his life. Then the next thing we have at 12 o'clock we had the Hasbro product preview panel, which essentially was the what was shown at San Diego Comic-Con. So there wasn't really anything new. The more so the whole point of that panel is it shows everything that everyone in San Diego who didn't see was from San Diego, but it's more important for the Canadians who have, because Hasbro Canada is present for that whole panel and they're the ones showing it off. So they answer questions that normally, you know, would never be addressed. So people who are from Quebec going, will, you know, this specific store exclusive or be at our location, you know, are we going to get this figure? Are we going to get that figure? You know, it's pretty much to address those kind of issues. How is distribution with that? Will this figure have English language? Will it be released at all? You know, little things that are asked, they could be asked directly because, you know, head office is right there in front of you. Mm-hmm. after that, there was autograph sessions with Simon Furman and Joe Nung. Simon Furman brought something really interesting with him that he debuted at TFCon. He had the original scripts for the last two issues of War Within Part 3 that never got printed. Because
Oh, wow.
when he did War Within Part 3, like the third installment, Age of Wrath, it never finished because Dreamwave went out of business. And even the omnibuses of War Within, I know Wendell, he bought the omnibuses.
Yeah.
The omnibuses only contain volumes 1 and 2 inside, which is the original War Within and Dark Ages, which was the debut of the Fallen. And they didn't include Ages of Wrath issues 1 and 2 because the story never concluded, so it'd be silly to include them. But what Simon did is he brought the original scripts for 3 and 4, and he was selling them and signing them to anyone who was interested. And so that was really cool of him to bring that. That was like a little like unexpected exclusive, if you will, that he brought to the show.
Awesome.
And Joe Nung, he just brought a whole bunch of prints and stuff to sign. It's just nice to see him and to see him again since the Dreamwave days, because he came to our show, I believe the last time was 2004, and that's when he came with Pat Lee and all like the Dreamwave crew. So it was just nice to see him again after that, after all the smoke has settled from all that craziness. There was also afterwards Gary Chalk had a question and answer panel, typical Q&A panels. But the one thing that was great about it, that was hilarious, and again, this goes back to Paul Eiding, people were asking questions to Gary Chalk, and then Paul Eiding got in line.
Well,
started,
he got into the back of the line and
and
he
then he
got him.
started trolling Gary Chalk. What did he ask, Wendell? Because you were there.
He was asking in a weird voice, a very familiar but weird, like old man voice. And he's like, what if Optimus Primal and Colonel Chekov from Stargate and that character, that sergeant you played in Freddy versus Jason and Papa Smurf? And everyone's like, wait, what? Papa Smurf? And we're trying to look for him in the crowd. And what if who would eat the most ice cream? And everyone started laughing.
And this
And
is
so
Paul Eiding, you know.
Gary Chalk actually gets off from the stage and starts looking for Paul Eiding. And he's like, I would know I would if Paul Eiding actually kept the mic away from his mouth, I wouldn't have known it was him. And then Paul Eiding starts putting the mic in his mouth, like, well, would you want it this close? This close? And
Like
so
that was hilarious, because it's just like, it loosens the mood, and this is to the professional guests that we got, and they were
what's so
joking
weird
with
was
each
that
other.
Gary Chalk actually answered the question. He said the Russian character he played would eat the most ice cream.
And
It
Gary's a great guy too. Gary's, but everyone knows, anyone who's ever met Gary, and Gary did our very first TFCon. He was our first guest that we ever had. He's a very chill individual. He's very relaxed. And the scary thing about Gary is that his regular voice is Optimus Primal. So
was.
when he talks to you, when he talks about anything, it's not voice acting. That's just who he is, you know?
Yeah.
And what was interesting is that Gary's agent was with him. And on the Friday, the agent had these cards that he bought from. There was some artist in the deal room. I don't know who it was. If they hear this podcast, please post and say who you were. But there was an artist in the deal room that had a picture of Optimus Prime, like a drawing of Optimus Primal holding a guitar and playing it. And it's a very it was but done like in like the CG style of Beast Wars.
Right.
And the
Yeah,
agent bought that from, excuse me, what
I
were
was
you gonna
gonna
say,
say it
Wendell?
was like I was just gonna say like it was in gorilla form and he
Yeah,
was
in
sitting on
gorilla
a
form.
stool and he had a acoustic guitar at him with a mic on him.
Yeah. So like just picture that. And so the agent bought that, and I was like, "Huh, that's such a weird photo." And then we later found out it's because Gary, despite the fact that he's known as a famous voice actor, is also an incredibly talented musician and singer, like and a very good singer.
Yeah, he
And
is.
so we were like, "Oh, wow." So when we found that out, because TFCon being TFCon, we just let anything happen. We actually scrambled to try to find someone who has an acoustic guitar. So while that was happening behind the scenes, we'll just go through everything else because it leads to something later on.
Okay.
So then on top of that, we had, okay, then Gary and then Paul did their autograph sessions, and that was great. And I know that Gary and Paul got interviewed by a whole bunch of TV studios that came down. I know CTV and two websites came down to interview him. There was also the costume contest, which this every year we get crazy costumes, the best being Mrs. Talon 4 Ace, also known as Vanessa, who's easily probably one of the best cosplayers in all of the Transformer community. Most of you know her of the dead-on Black Arachnia, animated Black Arachnia, and animated Bumblebee that she's done in the past. And so this time she came as a G1 Optimus Prime, and it was absolutely gorgeous. Yeah. And as a treat for all of us, in costume as G1 Optimus Prime, also a person that we didn't know was so talented, she played the piano.
Oh yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, and it was funny because she's playing the piano like a grand piano, like a big grand piano. And
oh
there's
wow!
And there's G1 Jazz just like leaning on the side of it, like yeah, yeah, like someone dressed. As and it was just, and again, just like one of those, like, you know, like it's a photo op moment. You know what I mean? Like that's something that you like, you put a poster of on the side of your wall or something. Really cool stuff. And then the last thing was in terms of contest, was the art contest of the 3D stuff, like, you know, the custom guys. This year, and I was one of the judges, this year was ridiculous to figure out who was going to win, because some, like, usually we have some of the, like, clear cut, this guy's going to win situations. But this year, incredible talents came out of nowhere. And there was Chanformers. He brought his classic style Overlord from Master Force, which is just, it was ridiculously huge. It was like a head and a half above the size of a Scorponok toy, and it fully articulated, combined like Overlord and everything. And then you had Nemesis Predaking Stu. He brought his classic style half shell, which was pretty much a classic version of King Poseidon from Beast Wars 2nd, but just like his half shell component. And you had Freedom Gundam. He made a power-up armor for animated Optimus Prime that turned him into Galaxy Convoy. Like, just the most insane customs I have ever seen showed up at the show this year, and it made it so impossible to pick who was going to win, because everything was some kind of, like, original engineering talent. It wasn't just some straight repaint with changed hands or a head. It was just some like scratch build gorgeousness, and anyone could have easily gotten gold, in my opinion. Anyone could have, but in the end, the half shell won, because a lot of staff, originally the judging was just me and GM Fan, but then we had to get other staff in, and then we had to actually ask some attendees and volunteers their opinions too, because it was just so split down the middle how great all the stuff was. Because it was always like, okay, this guy should win, but this one's good too, you know? And it was.
Yeah.
And then it was the same thing, the 2D art contest, it was a little more cut and dry. But one that stuck out at me was someone did a portrait of internet personality Vangelis and submitted it, like an actual drawing of internet personality Vangelis's face. And I think that was hilarious. Like, that person didn't win, but the fact that they did it was hilarious. What else? Simon Furman had a Q&A session. It was pretty straightforward. A lot of the questions were stuff that he couldn't answer, because a lot of people were asking about G181 that's coming from IDW. He pretty much, the only thing that he really talked about that was of interest that I can mention was who his favorite characters were and why he used them so much. And then he explained his understanding of his own Furmanisms, you know, so little things like that. And then they had the Revenge of the Video Games panel, which was ran by me. And what that was, last year, I did a video game panel, and it ran for an hour and 20 minutes. It ran 20 minutes longer than it was supposed to. I was just pretty much covering every Transformer video game ever made, ever.
I remember seeing that on YouTube.
And if you watch at the end of the video, when I start talking about the Armada game, I got a signal from one of the staff members going, like, wrap it up because we got to do something else. So I actually had to leave out a lot of stuff. This time around, I got a chance to put that stuff that I left out and do some little bonuses for the people this year. So I talked about the Tiger Electronics LD game from Generation 2. I talked about the animated LD game, like the LCD games. I talked about the Mugen fighting games, which were done by a Hong Kong community. I talked about a lot of the hacked games, like Super Autobot Brothers and everything. A lot of stuff.
Didn't you do a live playthrough of the Japanese G1 game?
Well, I did a live playthrough. Well, yeah, I did a live playthrough recently on Google Hangout.
Okay. No, I thought you actually did that at the convention.
Oh no, no. To beat Mystery of Convoy, you need to have a good 3 hours and something to bite down on. What I did was I was showing people different scenes, and I played through a majority using save states of the Dinobot Brothers, The Return of Unicron, which was essentially they took the game Super Mario 2 and they turned it into the Dinobots. And it's a crazy, like, again, that footage is going to show up somewhere online, just like how Vangelis did the first one. And people listening, find it. Your guys are going to laugh like crazy. Soul Fury, who's one of the head moderators of TFW 2005, he actually was doing a play-by-play like what they do with San Diego Comic-Con, where someone
like a blogcast or something.
Yeah, like a blogcast or whatever, where he was literally doing a blogcast of the entire panel. And like I afterwards went back and I read it all, and he was like, I don't know what I'm watching, but it's absolutely fucking insane. Like he was just like he couldn't even describe what he was seeing, because it was I brought a lot of crazy stuff. I really wanted to. Whenever I do my panels, I want to do something that like people leave it and go, oh my God, did you see that? Like, that's what I wanted. Not just like document, but like really show them crazy stuff. And then the last thing was the live script reading. And again, true to what I said before, we wanted to do something bigger than we've ever done before. It was the first time we did a script reading with two voice actors instead of just one. So we had, again, Gary and Paul Eiding together doing a script reading, and the story was when G1 Starscream was in the Beast Wars timeline and he was going through time and space, he accidentally caused a ripple when he escaped, which caused Perceptor to get sucked back into the Beast Wars timeline. And I didn't watch the whole thing because I was really busy, but it's Perceptor stuck in the Beast Wars timeline and an adventure that ensues. And a lot of fans got to audition and play as specific characters that would appear, namely Beast Wars characters. So that was pretty awesome. And then to cap off, the last thing that was done in that room was they played the original 86 movie. Because this year was also the 25th anniversary of the original 86 Transformers movie.
Yep.
So we wanted to celebrate that. And that was fun because watching it on the big screen with a whole bunch of people, especially the people that I was sitting with who were seeing it for the first time, that was really fun because I always
Young and old.
Yeah, young and old. There was children in the audience who were seeing it for the first time and laughing at Wheelie and laughing at the Junkions and stuff. And, you know, that's the new generation of fans, you know? So it was really cool to see, you know, people who were seeing the movie for the first time and laughing at, you know, excuse me, you know, it's always nice to have that first experience and relive it through other people. Cause I mean, all of us, we've seen it only a billion times.
Yeah.
so to see it through the eyes of, like, cause me, I brought some friends from Montreal who were toy collectors that collect anything but Transformers, but they were seeing the movie for the first time. And it was kind of my way of saying, this is what I like and how amazing it was. You know, like when that Optimus Prime scene happens, you know, it's like, I would turn to my friend and go, see, this is what I am. This is it. You know, this is how amazing it is. And it was that time to shine. And it was really cool.
I don't want to go off on a tangent here, but I have to say, it's all Hot Rod's fault.
Well, Wendell, didn't I yell something? Because I was actually horrible, because during the entire screening of the movie, I would yell at certain parts of the screen.
Mainly the only one that caught everyone off guard was towards the end when he starts using the Matrix. That threw everyone off.
Because what I did was I yelled when just before Hot Rod's about to interfere with Megatron, I yell, Hot Rod, don't do it. Yeah. And then just when he's about to grab the Matrix off of Unicron, I go, oh, this is it, you know? And I yell, like, extremely loud from the middle of the room, and everyone's just like, what the
fuck? Jump.
Yeah. Because I'm staff, and I could get away with that kind of stuff. Normally, I wouldn't do something like that. Because, again, I love that movie to death. And if it not for that movie, I wouldn't be where I am today, I think. So, and then the last thing of it all was the faction feud. And the faction feud this year, because one of our previous staff, Aronoff Mike, he retired from the show, we got Vangelis to host the faction feud. And for those who aren't familiar with the faction feud is essentially Transformers, but done in Family Feud style. So we asked them a question like, you know, name a Decepticon headmaster. And then what we do prior to the show is we poll 100 Transformer fans, and we see how many of them, you know, when you say name a Japanese headmaster, Decepticon headmaster, what's the first one that comes to mind? You know what I mean? And so that's pretty much how Family Feud on television is. It's the same thing. So, like, you know, you'd say Scorponok, and that gives you 60 points, as opposed to if you said Weird Wolf or
Mind Wipe.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so we did stuff like that, and that was really fun. And I believe the team that won that was the Firminisms, and second place was the Ninja Consultants. A lot of weird teams, but very impressive. I was the judge for that one, just so in case if people question stuff, I could settle it. But that was really fun. And then the last thing was the TFCon after party for the Saturday. And the TFCon after party was the thing that was crazy. And what that was, and what I mean by crazy, was going back to finding a guitar for Gary Chalk was, first of all, and this is where TFCon is awesome, we had a bar that was reserved for us, and the bar for the convention made Transformer drinks. So if you went to the bar and said, I want an Autobot, or if you wanted a Decepticon, you got a specific shot glass of a specific brew that was colored red or purple. And so, like, there were some people going, I want, like, 3 Autobots and 2 Decepticons, you know, and like it was.
So wait a minute. What if people wanted 3 Maximals and 4 Predacons?
I don't know. I guess yellow and green.
Yellow and green.
We didn't think that far ahead. Maybe at the Beast Wars anniversary. And it was funny because he had like Gary Chalk had like 3 Autobots, 3 Decepticons, and so when he downed those and we gave him the guitar, he started singing. And I'm not talking like he just did one song. He literally did like
7 song set, I guess.
No, more than that. Like Gary sung like, and we're sung. I think I'm not over exaggerating here. I think like 15 different songs. He just kept going, and like he sung. What's the song from Watchmen in the intro?
I have no idea.
You know, a time. Na, 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 na. You know the.
I didn't see Watchmen, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I have no idea. God.
Okay.
I read it. I did the more important
thing. Well, he sung a lot of classic 60s and 70s
and,
songs.
And like blues songs.
And
I know he did Muddy Waters, Hoochie Coochie Man, I remember that.
Yeah, he did Muddy Waters. Like he was singing like these, like word for word and very, because his voice is very good. And he's very good with the guitar too. He was singing all these songs and I swear, Mike, you had to be there. It was literally a humongous crowd around him. You had Paul Eiding, Perceptor, like, you know, nodding his head and singing along. You had Simon Furman, you know, there too with his wife and everything. Also, like, you know, tapping his toe. And then, like, literally, like, 30 to 40 fans just gathered around him like it was a campfire. Just every single word, you know, and everyone just going nuts at the end. And it was great. It was it was surreal. And people like Pia and people who have been doing BotCons for years who were there. And I was like, I was so happy that that happened because all these guys that were there for that, they're like, I've never seen it. I've never felt anything like that in my entire life. Because it's so hard to describe, but the atmosphere of that moment, it was just something that you would never get from any other Transformer convention in the world. And I don't want to insult BotCon and Auto Assembly and SlagaCon and all the others, but honestly, nothing will ever match what happened that night. Like it was insanity. It was absolute insanity. It was like it was spiritual what happened that night, where with Gary singing and just everyone gathered around him, and not just like fans, but like celebrities too within our fandom gathered around also, and all enjoying it. You know, it was unbelievable that night.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're not here. We're here to talk about this year's TFCon, but I just have to say, you know, the last two BotCons, I've noticed that because of social media, every one of the people that I know that have gone last year and this year have had a really fun time. But still, BotCon is, it's not segregated, but it's in cliques. You have the TFW people over here. You have these fans over here. You have those fans over there. You know, I mean, it's like going into a high school cafeteria and seeing the jocks, the nerds, the math geek. You know what I mean?
It's also, I find with BotCon, I've been going for a couple of years, it's very corporate.
Yeah. And that's the point of BotCon, because it is the official, and it is there for you to go and unfortunately stand in line for 7 hours to get an autograph from Peter Collins.
See, what's funny with that too is because the BotCon that just passed, Paul Eiding was there.
Right.
And it's funny how Paul was handled so differently at BotCon than he was at TFCon. And even Paul, actually not Paul, Simon Furman pointed it out. Where he was like, because when he was at the bar with all of us and we were all sitting together and talking and stuff, he was saying how, because this was his first time doing TFCon, he was saying it was unbelievable how different an experience it was for him, because he just was not used to that. Because Simon, all he's ever been doing is Transformer shows, but that being said, the only Transformer shows he's ever done were BotCons, and he felt that he's been carted around like cattle. You know, and he never had a chance.
And I mean, because you guys are, you know, essentially, I mean, compared to BotCon, because you guys are essentially smaller.
Yeah.
It's more personal.
It is. And it was unbelievable. It really was. Like, just, I can't wait until people start posting those videos of what happened that night, because like I was joking about it, but I really want to find someone who really recorded a good audio of it. And I want to like make a CD. I want to like Gary Chalk unplugged from TFCon. You know,
do you still have that picture you took, Daniel?
Of his back and then
everyone around him, basically.
Yeah, like I took a million photos, but one photo that I took, a really good one, was it was from behind Gary Chalk, like from behind him, because like everyone's gathered around him, literally like a campfire kind of thing, and it's just this beautiful spread of just everyone's eyes just focused on him with the guitar. And it's gorgeous. And in that shot, you see Simon Furman and Paul Eiding also, and it's just absolutely gorgeous. It was the first time like everyone in that room was on the same page. You know, it was so incredible. And then on that note, we moved to the Sunday. And
this is the first year you guys had a customizing class, wasn't it? Or no,
it's not. It's not the first year. We started the customizing class in 2009.
This just the first year that you had it on the Sunday, or did you always
had it on the Sunday?
Oh, okay.
It's just that the only first time with this customizing class, what it was in the past, Dak Duncan, he was the one who ran it in the past. And Duncan, he was the BotCon 2008, custom champion. Like he won the 3D contest, so we had someone who was a really legitimate guy when it came to customizing on our staff, who was in charge of the customizing class. And in 2009, we did Universe Rev based off of the RID character Spy Changer. In 2010, we did UK Flash using the Aveo Swerve mold. So we took Aveo Swerve and we turned him into a homage to the UK Flash figure. But this time around, because Duncan was not able to participate because he had a job doing some other stuff in the United States, we got two very talented customizers within our community to come on down and help with it. And this year, we had a Universe 2.0 downshift based on the Omnibot Mail-Away, and it was absolutely gorgeous how that turned out. Repro Labels helped out with it again this year, giving us stickers to give that final pop to the character, and it was a gorgeous figure. I'm actually jealous because I was not able to be in the customizing class because I'm staff. I do hope that we will have some made for staff afterwards. But and we just for those who are wondering, we used the Prowl mold from Universe 2.0 or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And but it came out amazing. Like, it's just they did so many little things here and there that changed it to make it look like Downshift. Now, granted, Downshift is a white car and so is Prowl, but the little nuances that were thought about that separate the two characters on an aesthetic, I call it a silhouette, you know, like if you saw just the silhouette of both characters from G1, the little things that you could do to it to change it to make one look like the other, and they were very clever with that. And the final, cool. Like the images are on TFW right now, some people posted theirs, but it's absolutely gorgeous. There's a new face.
Well, now, is your all's customizing class kind of like the same as BotCon's
it's the same as BotCon's where when the registration goes up online, it's literally the first 30 people and that's it.
Well, no, that's not what I was going to ask. I was going to ask as far as constructing the figure where maybe it's, you know, the same mold as the Prowl, but it's a different head.
Well, you see, the difference between us and BotCon's is BotCon's, what they do is you get similar to how the Chinese factory is, where everything's on a tree.
Mm-hmm.
BotCon's is more like you're assembling a model kit. Because you're literally building the figure from scratch, from the trees. You're snipping it off the trees and then gluing them together and screwing them together.
Okay.
And then you apply a few paint and a few stickers and bang, there's the custom class figure for BotCon. What we do instead is we give you the assembled Prowl. Because what we do instead is we get donated from Hasbro Canada, we get donated a large amount of figures of the same one. So this year we got donated 30 Prowls. So we take the Prowl, we literally take them off the bubble because they're in the package.
Yeah.
We take them out. We wash the figure first because you want to have you clean the oil off of the surface that comes from the factory. You disassemble it completely. And then, again, I wasn't there for the entire thing, but then the process begins. Usually the new head sculpt is something that's done by third party. We have a guy named Venksta who works in the community, and he helps with Impossible Toys with some of their stuff. And he's also a third party guy who does his own little things on the side. He was the one who was responsible for all the heads and everything. So he usually casts the head and Repro Labels, they cast us stickers and then they throw together some final product with painting and everything. And again, go online and take a look. It was a very beautiful final product. People on the boards were being very silly with it too, because they were looking at it and go, oh, well, there you go. Now we're screwed. Now we're never going to get a Universe 2.0 Downshift. And it's like, oh, come on, guys. What are you, stupid? You know, they were taking it seriously. Like, because we all know when we got Overkill in 2007, we never got an Overkill toy.
Yeah. The reason why I was asking about it is because, you know, you said the nuances that were added to just customizing the figure to make it look completely different. The reason why I was asking about that was because the first thing I thought of was how at BotCon this year they took the RC mold and just completely redid her as Minerva and Dragstrip. And that's what I was kind of comparing the transformation from Prowl to Downshift to.
Oh, yeah. Well, in the case with BotCon, where by just disassembling RC's head and putting in the antennas and then reassembling it, completely changed the silhouette of the character, not to mention, you know, they had Repro, they didn't have Repro Labels, but they had stickers that they attached to the RC that helped give that Minerva pop to it. It was the same. In this case, it was more so, you know, Downshift's original G1 toy has a form of, I wouldn't call it shoulder missiles, but he has two missiles on the side of his head in his G1 toy. So they applied that mentality because Prowl's G1 toy has two missiles on his shoulders. And so they tried to work it to have that similar aesthetic look working with that and painting with that. And, you know, again, I don't want to spoil it too much. I want people to see it and really figure it out themselves, but it's real, like it looks gorgeous. It really does. And the face really helps a lot too.
Yeah. If you send me the link, I'll put it in the, for the website for the podcast. Before we kind of move on from whatever else Sunday has an offer, Wendell, what was your favorite part of the convention this year?
It was seeing like people I haven't seen in, I guess, a year, mixing and mingling with people, even in the dealer room, the panels, Paul Lighting panels, speaking with Simon Furman and asking him what he thought of TFCon on a personal level. I remember one thing that was really funny was I was in the elevator with a friend of mine, and so we're going up, and Gary Chalk's in the elevator with us, and so this is the Friday night, and so I turned to him, and he was doing a part of a trivia thing to see who gets into the faction feud, and I turned to him, I say, so how did the trivia go? He's like, oh, it went really well, and so I kind of turned to my friend, and I go, that's Gary Chalk, and she looks over at him, and he introduces himself and says hi. And he gets off the elevator because he's like two floors below us. And she kind of turns to me and smiles and goes, maximize. You know, I had a little geek out there.
That's funny. Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't just do Optimal Optimus lines all weekend long.
Well, he was very professional about it too. People were asking him a lot of like, you know, the typical how to get into voice acting kind of questions, you know, and he was being very honest in how to go about it and what he did to get to where he did, you know, in his career. So, but yeah.
Is there anything else we left out of Sunday's activities?
Oh, there's a few other things for sure.
Okay.
Let me just pull it back up here because I was getting you the downshift picture. So on top of the custom class that was going on a majority of the time, Simon Furman also ran a panel because just like how people always ask how to get into voice acting, Simon ran a panel how to write comic books, the whole process and how it even works and how to break into it. And so that was really cool of him because for people who are, there's people who could draw, there's people who could, you know, act, but now here was an opportunity for people who could write, you know? And he was teaching that whole process. Like, you know, if you're a really good writer and you want to do comic books, you want to do this, here's what you got to do to break into the industry and who to contact and what to contact. And that was really cool of him to do a panel like that. There was also the 80s costume contest where now it opened up to not just Transformers because one thing I have to stress, the Sunday of the show, to be nice to our dealers, we give them the opportunity on the Sunday to also sell non-Transformers merchandise. Because, you know, like if we have a Big Bad Toy Store and they only bring Transformers, usually by the time the Saturday's over, a lot of their stock is gone. So as a deal, what we tell all our guys on the Sunday is you could bring anything you want afterwards. And that's what kind of evolved to the Sunday being known as the 80s Expo. Because now it's Transformers still, but now there's a spin on everything else. Now it's He-Man and G.I. Joes and Star Wars and Marvel and DC and all of that. And to work in coefficient with that, we have the 80s costume contest, just similar to how we had the Transformers costume contest. And so we had people showing up as Ghostbusters and Batman, and I saw Scarlet from G.I. Joe was one person, and
there was Ultimate Muscle.
Oh yeah, that was a great one. There was a guy dressed as Kiniku Man from The Muscle, like, you know, muscles, you know, millions of unusual creatures lurking everywhere, you know, like that was great. Like the guy was literally in just a leotard and the whole thing, like
leotard, face paint, and a big fin.
Yeah, and the big fin for a head. That was my favorite one actually. Just stuff like that. There was also again there was a panel how to get into voice acting by Paul and Gary, and they were being honest like how to break into the voice acting industry. And Gary, I think the most important thing that Gary said was he said about, you know, before he got into voice acting, he literally listed every job he ever had before he became an actor, just to give people an idea of, you know, how the road is sometimes not that, not that smooth. It's always kind of bumpy. And the one job that he used to have before
his
he was
first
a voice,
job, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was his first job. He said he used to be a guy who would deliver telegrams and stuff dressed as a gorilla. The absolute irony of it, you know. And so, like, just, you know. And then he said at one point he was Ramondo the kissing
Eduardo the kissing bandit.
Yeah, he was these guys, you know, that you would hire to like go to your party, and he'd wear a lot of like makeup on his mouth and stuff to look like a fake mustache, and when he'd kiss you, it would rub off on your face. Like he did a lot of like little jobs, you know, to survive.
Performing. He said to always perform.
Yeah,
to always keep performing.
Yeah, so you know his jobs, you know, while they were like not the best paying jobs in the world, they were jobs that still kept him in an acting kind of situation. So then another panel that I did, this was a back to back, was the and this is the big one that for a lot of people was the third product preview panel, and this was the first time this of anything of it has ever been done before, where just like how Hasbro at BotCon and at TFCon have their product preview panel. We wanted to do something for all the third party guys that they could show off their stuff that they're planning in the long run for everyone to see. And so me and GM Fan ran this panel together, and we pretty much debuted all the stuff that's being planned for iGear, Mastermind Creations, G1 Uppers, Roundhouse, Kiss, everything, like a whole bunch of stuff. Whole bunch of stuff. And that was all over like TFW's front page where they were doc like you know like we debuted Mastermind Creations have plans to do a classic style up like six shot you know
Oh, awesome.
yeah like a modernized six shot design. And there was also like they were showing more of the future. iGear has plans to do like the Seeker Jets and to do a two scale, because the thing is that recently all Masterpiece toys they've been downscaled like to match that Rodimus Grimlock Starscream size. So they're doing a whole bunch of Masterpiece toys that put, you know, the Megatron and the Optimus to scale with those other sizes. And then, you know, upgrade heads and different colors and new trailers and all kinds of just wacky stuff. I could go on and on. That there was I think the only other really interesting one was Mastermind Creations also, at least that caught my eye. They have plans to do a Hearts of Steel Shockwave.
Oh, interesting.
And that one supposedly is going to be leader class size and it's going to be huge. So
Wow.
that one's going to be nuts. After that panel, though, I did another panel which was called Transformers in Pop Culture, where I pretty much tried to find the wackiest cameos and appearances of Transformers throughout history and pop culture that no one knew about. Like, you know, I could have easily just shown like the Family Guy clips and Robot Chicken and stuff like that, but I didn't want to show those ones. I wanted to show the ones that no one knew about. Like, there was an episode of Miami Vice where you have like all these drug dealers. They're guarding this cocaine den, and you know they have these counterfeit bills and everything, and you know it's all like very tense and everything, and the cops are about to come, and then there's this one guard. He's just playing with a G1 Shockwave, you know. Like, and it's just like he's trying to figure it out, you know. And like the just tons of scenes like that, like Flight of the Navigators, Top Gun, all kind. There was a movie called The Professional with Natalie Portman and Jean Reno, where Natalie Portman's character would watch SOS Dinobots over and over on TV, you know. And I'm not saying like in the background. I mean like it was predominantly featured that she was watching SOS Dinobots over and over, you know, like just little things like that. And then the final thing that we did was the organizer panel, where again to celebrate, you know, now 10 years of doing this show, but also to just, you know, thank everyone who worked on the show. And for anyone to air any opinions, complaints, or comments that they would like to say. And a lot of, you know, most of the comments were just, you know, positive stuff. I think the only one that was a negative, trying to remember what it was. Oh my God, 'cause I like there was a lot of like just people really dug the show. I think it was something about the exclusive need to be more numbers, but something like because like a lot because literally like every like there was 50 of the snake and the first 50 people in line got the 50 of the snake, you know, so.